Hello, and welcome to the Game Slave Podcast, episode 168. I'm Proteus.
I'm Assimilator.
And I'm Zelda Queen.
And last night, there was a binge.
Different types of binges, but there was binging to be had among all. I'll let you guys start.
Yeah, Zelda Queen and I watched all of season 2 of Korra in one night. Which was a bit much.
Was it worth it?
I don't know. It's a lot of just sitting my butt there and watching television more than I usually do.
Oh, how many episodes was it? 26?
14. No,
14? Oh, that's not too bad. Half hour each, minus give or take, 20 minutes minus take it to 20 minutes each for commercials. So you're a little about, what, 5.5 hours?
Yeah, we started about 6-ish, finished about midnight-ish. Just marathoned it through. I still don't know what to think about it. On one hand, I feel that there's certain parts that are a lot better than the first season. But on the other hand, I feel like some of the characterizations, at least in the early episodes, are very shallow. Like, the characters are like, Korra's just stubborn. And Bolin's just kind of funny, and Tenzin's always kind of a stick in the mud, and like everybody's just sort of boiled down to a couple of their character traits, which is really sad because I felt like at least in the previous season they tried to expand. Yes, Korra's stubborn, but she's also a lot of other things. It just sort of felt like the first few episodes, it's like, okay, we gotta give a reason for this plot. Here we go, but let's not like the characters act. I don't know. I just feel like they had like the same response to everything. I don't know. I guess part of the thing, too, from the leap between Avatar, The Last Airbender, to Korra, at least for me, is it vastly changed really fast in, what, about 50 years or so? Mm-hmm. And there's just some political stuff that we just don't know about. And I always felt that at least in Avatar The Last Airbender, a lot of the nation stuff was really small. Like, the Fire Nation was pretty big. The Earth Kingdom was pretty big. Northern Water Tribe, fairly decently sized. Southern Water Tribe, on near brink extinction sort of thing. But in Korra, it's like, it's only been 50 years. And you would think that nothing ever had happened during the Hundred Years War. Like, everyone's pretty much, like, their populations are all very large. And it's like, I can understand there being a little bit of a baby boom, but that seems like more people than what could happen. I don't know.
Are the Air Nomads only Aang's family?
No, there are Air Nomads that...
Non-bending.
They're non-benders. But they follow the Air Nomads' ways. In fact, they're living in the Air Temples again. And they sort of revere, you know, Tenzin and his family because they're the only airbenders. And I guess it's the other thing, too, is how are people genetically predisposed for only certain bending? But that's a whole other, you know, sort of discussion thing. I don't know. I just feel like some of the political stuff sort of felt, you know, like it kind of like, oh, I didn't realize this was going on. And I don't think that the show sort of gives any sort of indication until it's happening that this is what's kind of going on.
There's no foreshadowing to make you look forward to it?
Not even foreshadowing or just, you know, mentioning, oh, you know, thank you for this sort of thing. It's just like, or Northern Water Tribe's been helping out the Southern Water Tribe a lot. It kind of was alluded to, but very briefly, I felt. I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, just in the first couple beginning episodes, it's just like, oh, I didn't realize the North had, like, this huge war fleet. It just seems like, I don't know, I feel like, would they really have a war fleet like this? What was going on between, you know, end of a 100-year war and now to warrant this? I don't know.
Maybe they built up because they didn't want something like the 100-year war to happen again?
Maybe.
I mean, I could see a little paranoia there.
Yeah, it just little world-building sort of things. I was just like, oh, okay. I just felt like some of it was a little ham-handed. I feel like the series really picked up more when you start learning about how
the origin of the Avatar.
Yeah, how the Avatar came into being, why the Avatar came into being, what the, you know, the Avatar sort of mission is. The sequences there too, at least the art and such, are gorgeous. They are very Asian inspired background paintings and that sort of stuff, with very simple lines and sort of like washes almost in color. It's really nice. The animation in the whole series is pretty fluid, but especially there, which is really well done. And I think once that happens, all the characters sort of like, oh, we're characters, we're actually real people, and start having a broader range of emotions and responses and what they're, you know, working with, and better chemistry. I guess it's, you know, Avatar The Last Airbender, I think they figured out really fast who Aang was, who Katara was, who Sokka was, and they all could bounce off each other really well. And when Toph got added, you know who Toph was too. They knew who she was. So the characters worked really well. That's what you want. It's like, yeah, there's cool, you know, bending sequences and the artwork's pretty, but it's character driven. You want to care about the characters and what they're fighting for and what their goals are. And when it's just Korra's like, I'm just stubborn all the time, just like, I just like, she's more than that, and please show that she's more than that. Though I don't know what they're going to do for the next season, because I don't know. I feel that the end of this one's like, how do you beat what happens in the end of the season? Do you think the Fire Lord is big? Korra fights something even immensely larger.
So, I mean, are they having a third season? Because I know originally they weren't having a second season.
They got signed for two more seasons, I think.
After the end of the first.
After the end of the first. Because the first, yeah. The first Korra was supposed to be just standalone. You know, that's it. But it did so well again that Nickelodeon's like, oh, well, here, have two more seasons. And they're all like, oh, yay. Because maybe then certain things wouldn't have been as rushed in the first season. I have to, you know, sit on a little bit more. There's parts of it I'm like, oh, this is really cool. And other parts, I'm just like, I feel like it fell a little short. Avatar The Last Airbender just fits so well between all the stuff that I think Korra is trying to recapture some of that magic. And maybe it's the whole thing. It's trying to live up to being, and it's not.
Well, I think with Avatar, the Last Airbender, they knew they had three seasons. They had, okay, here's our origin, here's our goal, and now we need to work towards that. So they were able to write between that. And I mean, we had, you know, our quote unquote filler episodes, but that was typically used to elevate what were one time side characters / villains to major roles. I loved Iroh.
Yeah, I just felt... See, that's the thing. Like, Iroh never was really bad, per se. If you want to, you know, go in terms of bad and good.
He had done some bad things.
Yeah, he had, but...
He had done some bad things, but he was human, I think, is the best term for it.
Yeah, he made mistakes. And he realized the mistakes he made, and he set to correct them, and basically kind of changed his worldview and tried to share this view with other people. I mean, Zuko was a, you know, well-done character. He went from, you know...
Vengeful prince.
Self-loathing. He hated himself. He really did. And he became, you know, a very honorable person who finally, you know, figured out, I'm going to stand up for what I think is right, even if it's against everything that I originally wished for and wanted. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
About the same as you. I think they did some things really well, and some things could have been done better. Do you like the origin of the Avatar sort of... So just one episode?
No, it's...
I thought it was a couple.
It was a couple episodes.
Yeah. Those were really well done. Interesting. I did like some of the payoff in Tenzin's storyline, actually. His character development. I thought that was rather well handled.
Cool.
Yeah. So.
Well, I'll definitely have to catch it sometime. I got a lot on my list. That's why I haven't watched it yet.
Well, yeah, I didn't watch it either. I kind of forgot because the season premiere was the weekend of the con.
Mm-hmm.
And we were at the con doing all sorts of other stuff. Missed it. And I'm like, oh, I'll keep catching the episodes later. We'll keep forgetting.
And they go away from Nickelodeon.com and
I'll buy the DVDs when they come out.
Yeah, I finally decided to put the Avatar DVDs on my Christmas list this year because they're only like $15 a season now.
Oh, hey, that's not bad.
For the original run.
I'm sorry, on a side note, your cat's hilarious. If you guys can hear anything in the background, this sounds like scratching. That's the cat trying to get into the room where we're recording. Well, what I did this weekend was, first off, got the Xbox One, did the unboxing video, and put it up on the site. I realize why they're calling it an all-in-one system when you hook it up properly. Because I have basically the Dish Network box goes into the Xbox One, and then that goes into the TV. And then it uses the HDMI cable to send signals to the Dish box in order to get it to do stuff via voice command. So the example that I used earlier today with the rest of the folks here at the GameSlave HQ was turn on my TV, then I go Xbox on, wait for it to boot up, then say Xbox watch BBC America, and it automatically changes the channel to BBC America. I don't need to know the channel that it's on, it just automatically does that. The only thing I don't know if I can do is I don't know if I can access the Dish's DVR functionalities through voice, so that's something I need to play with. And then let's see, they did give you Primal Rage?
Killer Instinct?
Killer Instinct, that's it. They gave you Killer Instinct for free, but they only give you one fighting character for free.
I heard that. My brother was talking about it. He's like, yeah, he goes, the game's basically free, but if you want any other characters, you gotta pay for them.
Mm-hmm.
So each character is a microtransaction.
That makes no sense.
You get to fight with one character for free, or you can buy characters individually, or they also have them in bundle packs, where you can get these many characters for free plus these two that are going to come out, or there's one other where you'll just get everything they bring out for it. I'm not enough of a fighting game fan to go out of my way to do that.
Yeah, that just seems like a really asinine way to pay for a video game.
Well, especially since now Sony did do this right, PS Plus members. I mean, you got Flower for free. I think you get Flower for free. Maybe because I already bought it. You get Resogun for free, though. And you got this one other game, which I don't remember its name, but it's like basically Ninja Robots for free. So there's some stuff you can play right off the bat without having to buy anything. So that I think they could have done a little better. Maybe throw you a little more bone, maybe five characters.
Or at least four. That way each person, if somebody wants to play with you, each person can take a different character at least.
Yeah. And then the game I got for it was Dead Rising 3. So I've gotten a couple hours into it, I think. I've killed about 1,500 to 2,000 zombies so far. It's a lot of zombie killing. And they, you know, sometimes you'll have an area where they're a little sparse. It makes it a little easier to walk up to them. Other times I'm like, holy, how am I going to walk through this? And the character, he's like, oh crap, oh crap, oh crap. He doesn't make any show of being real strong. He's just like, I am screwed. But they do have a nice, you know, they brought back the making random weapons thing. So, like, I have a blueprint to combine a car battery and a sledgehammer into a shocking weapon. Or connecting a handsaw. Again, it was a sledgehammer. This just happened to be convenient. So I can either pound it on the ground in order to get zombies that are down, or swing it and saw them. Or I also was able to combine a motorcycle and a steamroller to make a very fast, giant steamroller type thing.
The logistics of this one, yeah. I'm guessing
this is a game that just disrespects physics.
Oh, completely! Because he does most of his connections using duct tape and a blowtorch.
Yeah, I seem to remember one of the previous versions where you have like the drill bucket and such.
Yeah, in Dead Rising 2, you could do the sort of thing, but now you don't. I never played Dead Rising 2, so I can't say if this has changed. But you don't need to go to a workbench to make these weapons. You can, as long as you have them with you, or in the case of the vehicles, both vehicles are right next to each other, you can just create it. So, for example, one of the things was combining a teddy bear with semi-automatic weapons. basically it was a robotic teddy bear that was meant that you basically put the guns on it and then it would kind of just shoot at zombies that moved. And I could, I found an upgrade for it. So once you had that, you could duct tape a radio to the side of it and it would attract the zombies. Now, one thing they did do that's kind of cool, since they knew everybody would have a Kinect, there is some Kinect functionality in it. For example, when you're fighting bosses, it will flash you a taunt phrase you can say. So if you actually say that phrase, it will either taunt the boss to attack you when you want him to, or like I was doing this one where I was telling the guy, hey, calm down, and he would stop attacking me. So then that would leave me open to attack him. So that was nice. But yeah, I'm only a few hours in so far. I'm not going to spoil what little about the story I've learned so far, besides the fact that the characters seem prominently screwed right now, and for some reason bandits to figure a zombie apocalypse is a good time to try and take over the city for themselves. Never mind that in 5 days it's going to be carpet bombed with napalm, essentially. Yeah.
You so, for more of it.
I'm going to play it a little bit more. I actually am enjoying it, but I kind of want to get back to Assassin's Creed 4 because I was enjoying that too. The downside of having multiple games at a time is it's hard to budget that time.
Yeah, my brother was talking about Assassin's Creed 4. He's like, I was working on the main quest, and then I sort of got sidetracked by collecting everything. He's like, I had to go purposely and find more sea shanties, and he had to explain that when you're moving around, your crew kind of sings. And he goes, there was just one shanty that they were singing constantly. Something, he's like, something about going to Cuba. They want to go to Cuba all the time. And I got tired of it, so I purposely went out and found more so they could sing. So it's different. They actually will sing more, different songs in their repertoire. And I was like, and he's like, but now they don't sing that first one at all. And I kind of missed the Cuba song now. And I'm like...
So for people that played the original Assassin's Creed 3, not necessarily the original, in Assassin's Creed 3 there were Benjamin's Almanac pages that you would chase down that would kind of fly away when you got close to them. You could read whatever was on the page once you collected an entire chapter. The shanties have replaced the page and your crew sings whatever shanties you found. Like the one that I've heard, what you're going to do with a drunken sailor. And this one, I don't remember the majority of the lyrics except for, that's a lie, that's a lie, that's a lie, lie, lie. Because whatever, it's like one person is singing and every time he says something, everybody calls him a liar.
Choir response.
Pretty much. But it does add some, it gives you a little more motivation to go get those shanties.
Because otherwise the one will drive you insane. That's what happened to my brother.
But yeah, I've done the same thing where I've gone, it's like, I'm doing the quest. Hey, sidetracked. And I've had a few times where I've taken assassin's contracts that took me to a place that had some collectibles I needed that I never would have gone to had I not taken the assassin contract. Mm-hmm. And the assassin contracts aren't always where you take them. Like if you're in a little seaside town instead of one of the bigger cities like Havana, when you get the thing, it might send you to another island for your target. Mm-hmm. Let's see. But yeah, I think it was a really well done game. It's also odd welling an orca. I don't think I should be able to win that one, but somehow I do. Haven't gotten to the Great White yet, though. I think those are going to be a little tough. Anywho, moving on. But yeah, Xbox One, I like the all-in-one features of it, and the new Kinect is actually a lot more sensitive, especially in low-light areas. The other one kind of had issues where if you didn't have enough light, it wouldn't detect you very well. This one, literally, it's like I didn't turn on any lights in the room, so it was fairly low-light. Turned on the Xbox, and like, hello, Chris, and then logged me in. I didn't do it manually, and I know it doesn't do it automatically because if I'm standing to the side and I turn it on and the system can't see me, it kind of shows everything in a gray tone. And then when I walk into view, it logs me in and changes it to the red tones I have set for my profile. Hmm. So it's definitely a lot more sensitive, and it's definitely, I think, made for a more large group entertainment type thing. And then other thing that I did specifically Saturday night was I watched my recording of Day of the Doctor after I got out from running around. I don't want to do too many spoilers here, so I'm going to try and avoid doing any spoilers because I know two people here that would like that to be spoiler free. But needless to say, I thought it was a really good episode. It changes how you view the Doctor, and it gives him a new goal. And then it said in December, the silence will fall at the end of the, as a teaser for the, what's coming up. So that might mean that the answer, that the question is answered. Which, did you guys ever get to the point where they tell you what the question is?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. It was so obvious. But yeah, so I really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to these two seeing it so I can eventually talk about it with them. I talk about it with Care Bear, but she doesn't care for Doctor Who, so it's just like, I tell her about it, but it's hard to properly describe Doctor Who to people who don't watch Doctor Who.
I'm trying to get my parents to start watching it, which is kind of funny, because my parents are kind of, they have geeky tendencies, and one of the things is usually science fiction. And my mom's more interested now. I mean, watch the first episode. But I don't know about my dad. I'm like, come on, you guys watch all this Star Trek and everything. And they've been watching all sorts of stuff with my brother, like Game of Thrones and Rome and I forget what all else.
You think it would be easy to get them into Doctor Who then?
Yes. I know it's a little bit distant air since it's British. And sometimes you're like, because there's a little bit more British flavored humor in it.
Well, there's some like cultural references that are British sometimes,
like MPs and stuff like that. But if you can believe, you know, about space aliens and time travel and all this other sort of stuff, believing in, you know, Britain stuff is not that hard, really.
That's just, instead of America constantly being the go-to thing, it's London, America, Britain.
I went to see Dave the Doctor, but I haven't been like nearly as like geeky excited. I feel like everybody else has.
Well, and they didn't introduce him yet in Day of the Doctor. Well, like, technically they introduced him, but Matt Smith is still the Doctor right now.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, just in general.
Oh. I've been, because I didn't want Day of the Doctor to be spoiled for me in a lot of stuff, I actually avoid it. It's like whenever I was getting to parts where it might talk about it, it's like, nope, skipping you. I know it's a part of being a blogger. You have to find the happy medium behind keeping yourself pleasantly surprised and reading enough to know what you're talking about. But this one's just like, nope, I don't want to know anything. As it is, I knew that Tennant was going to be back, and it's like, that would have been a nice surprise.
Well, they were talking about, because they try to get lots of people back. Like, they try to get Eccleston to come back. I want to say, did they get Donna?
I don't remember. I don't think I saw Donna.
Okay, because there was a rumor going around that they got her to come back, which was like, that'd be really odd, considering where we left her character. If she remembers anything, her head will explode.
Yeah, that would be bad. Of course, they did a few things that they're not supposed to be able to do. For example, you guys probably already know this, two doctors in one timeline frame spot.
It's one of those big time travel things. Don't go contact yourself or find yourself or run into yourself.
Don't mess with your own personal timeline. Which, yeah.
The Butterfly Effect movie is a good example of this. I don't know if either of you have watched it.
I have.
It's a creepy all movie, quite honestly. I don't need to see it again. Once was enough.
Once was enough.
Yeah. I guess it's just, we haven't seen the newer episodes.
The second half of season
7 or 8.
I'm sure you guys will see it. It's second half of season 7.
Okay.
Because I loaned you guys the first half of season 7. And I was kind of, I don't know. It was
very lackluster. It was just,
yeah, I felt
there are a couple of good, there's like one good episode, a couple of good moments in the rest of the episodes.
I liked the dinosaur episode.
There's some good moments in it, especially with the introduction of Rory's dad, especially later on with the cube episode. Rory's dad, to me, makes that episode. If it wasn't for him, it's kind of like, meh.
There's nothing else memorable about that cube episode except for Rory's dad. I've been observing the cube.
That was the one with the dinosaurs, wasn't it?
No.
He has a spade.
Oh, that episode.
See, this is the problem. We were just having this discussion. what can we remember from the, when you let us borrow and watch it, we watched it, and the other day we were talking about Doctor Who things, and we're like, well, what were the episodes? And we had to think, and we really had to think hard. We're like, well, the first one's with the Daleks, and Amy and Rory are fighting, but they're fighting to me, and like, it's just more like, Amy has to choose again. I'm like, no, stop this. Stop this. She chose a long time ago. Let's get over with this. And then the second episode is Dinosaurs on the Spaceship. And then the third is, what, the town?
Town called Mercy.
Which, I didn't, that episode, I was like, this is awful. I really hated that episode, actually. It is down on the bottom of episodes that I like to watch. And the cube episode, I don't remember anything other than Rory's dad observing the cube and every day of his recording. That's the only thing I can remember. That, and it had screechy ear things.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Angels in Manhattan is the best, but it's just because it's the most, I'm going to play with your emotions sort of thing.
Well, it's where they got rid of the pawns. Spoiler.
It's where the pawns depart. You know, a companion's going to depart with the doctor eventually. This is their episode where that happens.
It was just the way they departed.
Yeah. And then, I don't know, I just felt so lackluster with this first half. I'm kind of, like, not caring as much of seeing the second half with the new companion and such.
She could do better. They could do better with her.
I guess I'm just like, I don't know what she's like, or because then it's the whole discussion too. It's like, which how do I like companions? What do the companions, you know, bring, you know, as a character to things? Mm-hmm. And I kind of keep defaulting. I think after much discussion, I think Donna is my favorite.
Donna was a good companion.
I like Rose still.
Mm. Rose grew a lot personally, I think, throughout her time as a companion.
I just feel that Rose, though, out of everybody, gets the perfect ending. She gets everything she kind of wants other than she's in a parallel universe. She gets a human version of the Doctor, the man that she falls in love with, and he can age and die with her.
And she gets her parents back together.
Yep, and yeah.
Sort of.
Pair for one world, pair for the alternate. Yeah, see, she, and I'm like, all the other, Martha, I think, ends up okay, but her family and her are scarred for life because they remember everything that happened under the Master. Donna can't ever remember anything because her head will explode and she'll die. The pawns, at least they're together. They just get thrown back in time from the rest of their family. And do they ever know what happens? I mean, Rory's dad, you know, I think talks to him before they go before. And he's like, oh, I'll see you when you get back, sort of thing. And I'm like, what do you do?
I like to think off screen Matt Smith at least took Rory's dad to their grave to let him know where they were buried.
Or did they, like, write him letters and say, don't deliver this? It's always like the Back to the Future thing, you know, when Marty's standing there and they show up with the letter from Doc when he gets transported back to the 1800s. I mean, does this sort of thing happen? Don't know. River loses her parents. Granted, she's, you know, but the doc, she may be married to the doctor, but
River's entire thing is kind of convoluted to start with. And I mean, I feel bad for River. I think I've said this before, but I just feel bad for her. Because the first time the doctor experiences anything, I mean, it's the last time she experiences it.
Yeah, so yeah, that's the only problem I have with Rose's, like, exit. I guess in terms of... It's too neat. She doesn't have any personal wounds, really.
In her defense, though, she did end up having to travel through multiple dimensions in order to get what she wanted.
Yeah,
several times.
She did work at it. I guess it wasn't that she just got it totally for free. She did, you know, work at it. It's just, I feel like, you're like, oh, we're going to give you the perfect happy ending and nobody else.
Well, they gave her the perfect happy ending after they got a really sad, awful ending.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she did say goodbye to the doctor forever the first time. And plus, it's sci-fi stuff in order to add a convoluted reason why these people ended up happy. But yeah, anywho, point is, I liked Day of the Doctor. I thought it was really good. I think they did it justice. And yeah, you guys have anything else you want to talk about?
I've just been playing more of the rhythms.
All right. Well, then everybody have a great week. We'll be back here in theory next week, assuming Thanksgiving things don't end up throwing us on a loop for some reason or another. In the meantime, you can find us on thegameslave.com. Send us mail, comments, questions, whatever, to mail@thegameslave.com. And you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus, all at thegameslave of some form. You should know by now. If you don't know, listen to the last podcast. It's all there. Game on.
Game on.
Game on.